Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Every once in a while, the mask slips. NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg said the obvious when saying if Putin wins, this is not only a big defeat for the Ukrainians, but it will be the defeat and dangerous for us all. Yes, NATO is at war with Russia. So much for the claim of being a defensive alliance. Crosstalking NATO's war, I'm joined by my guest Nikolai Petro in Kingston. He's professor of political science at the University of Rhode Island. In Jersey City, we have Sarah Flounders. She is co-director of International Action Center. Her upcoming book is Sanctions, a Wrecking Ball in a Global Economy. And in Mount Jackson, we have Karen Kwiatkowski. She is a retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel who served both NSA and the Office of Secretary of Defense. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Nikolai, I'd like to return to what Stoltenberg said. I'm going to repeat it here. A military victory for Russia in Ukraine would spell defeat for the entire Western alliance. Well, I mean, that's saying the obvious, though NATO continues to say it is not a co-belligerent, and it's not in a military conflict with Russia. But by saying that, de facto, it's true. And I would say on this side of the pond, a lot of people believe exactly the same thing. That's why the stakes are so high. Go ahead, Nikolai.
I agree with you completely. And like you said, what else is new? But that's why Putin's rhetoric has become more and more, I would say, clearly anti-Western, identifying the West as the primary antagonist to Russia here. And I think because of these kinds of statements, by leading Western politicians, his assessment has also become more widely accepted, if not in the West, then throughout the rest of the world.
Okay, well, Sarah, essentially the same thing, because when we see, for example, Politico is reporting here, NATO eyes 10-year plan for Ukraine. I mean, they're talking about the next 10 years instead of the next 10 days, the next 10 weeks here. I mean, this all gives them all more reason for the Russians to say, you know, the using Ukraine as a surrogate, as a proxy against Russia, is all the more real, and that NATO is not going to cease and desist. It is not going to look at the facts on the ground. It's not seriously going to talk about negotiations. I mean, this is quite extraordinary. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, NATO is committed. It exists for the attempt to destroy Russia, to dismember Russia, to impose regime change so they can loot Russia. That is the purpose of NATO. So, yes, Ukraine is a proxy, and so are all the other new members of NATO. And NATO, from its very founding, 1949, when it was committed to the destruction of the Soviet Union, it exists as really a criminal alliance of pirates and looters in an effort to destroy the Russia of today and earlier. So we shouldn't be surprised that they're using Ukraine as a proxy, and they have no intention of ending. It won't come from a NATO decision to end this war.
Well, Karen,
war may become at a certain point, they can't pursue it. They've been really set back. That doesn't mean they will stop other attempts countries.
I'm sure they won't stop here. Karen, if we could put it into context here, I mean, if you look at American foreign policy, what is the strategic value of Ukraine? I mean, it's never been. All of a sudden, it is. And I would even say in a European context that Ukraine doesn't play any strategic role in their security thinking. But all of a sudden, it does. And this is creating a moral hazard for both sides, I would say. Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also, if you look at the arc of, and when we talk about NATO being a proxy, it is funded by the United States. Okay, so it's a criminal pirate alliance. I agree with that. Funded and managed for the most part by the United States. So it is a U.S. actor in many ways. And if I was a European, I would be ashamed to have headquarters of NATO there and to celebrate NATO, because it really celebrates puppetry. But if you look at the longer trend all the way back to, well, let's start with Clinton. We could go further, but Bill Clinton and Yugoslavia, the breakup of Yugoslavia. What's on the other side of that? Well, former Russian territories. And that was a NATO operation. Then we had invasion, occupation of Afghanistan. And of course, Iraq was a NATO operation as well, and Iraq against Iran. But look at Afghanistan, 20 years in Afghanistan, a NATO operation in many ways. And NATO was part of that. Why? It's not anywhere near Europe, but it doesn't matter. It was part of it. And then we abruptly left, you know, about 19 years too late, but we left already. Preparation for, you know, making a new theater in Ukraine had been in place by the summer that we left Afghanistan. 6 months before we left, we're simultaneously working and planning for what's happening in Ukraine today. And again, yes, NATO caused that. The United States caused that. That is a theater facilitated by the West, and Russia had responded to it. In fact, in a conservative way so far.
I'm really glad you said that. Nikolai, what we had over in the beginning of this week here in reaction to the sabotage of the Crimean Bridge, and I would also say Nord Stream, is that we had a 2 days of a missile barrage, essentially knocking out 30% of the Ukrainian electricity grid. The pain dial can go much, much higher. Nobody seems to be reacting to that, okay? I mean, this is shock and awe a la Rus, which is kind of pales in comparison to what the United States does when it goes into a country. But there doesn't seem to be any kind of rational reaction. It's like, oh, well, you know, we need to start putting, everybody needs to start putting the brakes on this here. But it's just the opposite that's happening. We have the G20 coming up. Biden has no intention of talking to Putin. I mean, isn't this a time to talk? Nikolai.
Well, Putin's presidential advisor, Mr. Ushakov, recently responded to all these statements made by the Ukrainian government that they would never engage in negotiations with Russia, okay, by simply saying the famous Bond line, never say never. And I think the assumption is that the Ukrainian elite, for all its fervor now to prosecute the war, will nevertheless be forced to face realities on the ground if the tide of war should turn visibly against them. And that, I think, is why we're having two wars conducted simultaneously. One is the actual military campaign, the progress of which, as far as I can tell, is very murky and full of contradictions. The other is the propaganda war, yeah, in which the United States and its allies have been able to muster and create an artificial environment of support of roughly 90% for Ukraine. Now, much of this, as a study by the University of Adelaide has shown, much of this is artificial and created by bots, but nevertheless, it forms part of the environment which allows the West to continue to prosecute this war.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Karen, I'm sorry, Sarah, you know, if you have bad narratives, it creates bad outcomes when it comes to policy, kind of reflecting on what Nikolai just said here. The problem I have at this point in time, if nobody wants to negotiate, then why shouldn't Russia pursue its military goals in Ukraine? I mean, if there's nobody to talk to, and nobody wants this to go on forever, particularly people in Russia, I can tell you that. But if there's no interlocutor, then what's the point of trying to figure out what the other guy is thinking, other than the propaganda that we've been hearing here? Russia will continue achieving its goals, whatever they may particularly be. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, really, Russia has no choice, because although again and again from every direction they have called for negotiations and have from the beginning, NATO, which is a U.S. commanded military force, U.S. equipped military force in Europe and far beyond, has shown no interest in negotiations of any kind and stopped cold when Ukraine even began to discuss negotiations. So it is U.S. policymakers who are refusing any form of negotiation. And we got to take note of where the refusal is coming from. the interest of U.S. policymakers. And this is true, Republican and Democrat. This is true for
absolutely
the entire U.S. establishment. They have no interest in ending this war. They are interested in dragging it out and seeing who else they can drag into it. It is absolutely pulling down the EU economically and creating enormous division and opposition. And that opposition is important. People are making themselves heard. But the plan of all of the rulers, of all of the decision makers, is to drag this war out, to drag Russia in every way that they can. And so once a war is started, and engaged, Russia has no choice but to continue militarily until there's a real effort at negotiation. But it's a very dangerous
moment. What makes it dangerous, Karen, before we go to the break here, is that, you know, there's this talk of nuclear weapons. Now, I'd like to point out to our viewers, it didn't come from the Russian side. It came from the Western side, invoking nuclear weapons, creating fear-mongering as usual, because this what's being set up here is a trap to make Russia overreact and say, oh, well, something must be done, as they always say here. That's what is very dangerous here, because this is brinkmanship. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, it is. It is brinkmanship. And it's also preparing the propaganda landscape for the explosion, accidental or on purpose, of some sort of nuclear weapon or a weapon of mass destruction of some sort. They're preparing people to expect it, so that when it happens, we will blame it on the West, will blame it on Russia, of course, when in fact, it's very likely that if it happens, it will be something that we have been behind, much as the Nord Stream attacks and much as the propping up of the Ukrainian government over the last, I don't know how many years. So, there's a game being played, a brinkmanship, and it's a dangerous game. And
if there is use of nuclear weapons, it's going to be in Ukraine, okay? I mean, this is your ally, okay? This is what's really insane about this. The people that will suffer the most by a decision made in Washington.
Well, actually, you know, when we talk about the U.S. resisting any emergence of a multipolar world, which we know is what's behind this, and we say, well, we don't want Russia to rise up, we don't want China to rise up. In fact, the United States also does not want the EU rise up. Not that it would.
That's
it's got a lot of financial problems, got a lot of issues. But
on that point, we have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on NATO's war. Stay with us. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing NATO's war. Okay, let's go back to Nikolai. By last count, at least, there have been 8 rounds of sanctions against Russia with no discernible effect on life, everyday life here. I'd like to point out, if you were involved in international finance, you got screwed, okay, because of the Swiss system. But other than that, very, very little so far, okay? Let's be careful what I say. But, you know, I see Zelensky sending out demands that the U.S. Underwrite its budget for the rest of this year and all of next year. I mean, it seems to me, I'm sorry, I'm very cynical, this is a pretty good grift.
So, yes, I was struck by an editorial in The Economist magazine recently that pointed out that while Europe and the West is sinking into recession, Russia's coming out of it. Knowing the ideological bent of The Economist, this is an extraordinary admission. And I think that it must have been very difficult for them to write something like that. I'm glad, Peter, that you mentioned the word brinksmanship, because the key error here is that the person leading the brinksmanship is in fact doing so because they think they know how far to push and when to step down.
Oh.
And that is not always the case, especially when your ally is in a feverish delusion about their possibility of achieving success and on the ground militarily. The last point I want to make, and I don't think is made often enough, is that on a geopolitical level for the West and for the United States, it strikes me as an error of colossal proportions to win Ukraine at the expense of losing Russia. That is just the kind of trade-off in geopolitical strategy that you never want to make, and that bodes very, very poorly for the future of the West, I think.
And let me go to Sarah. I mean, I absolutely agree with Nikolai, what he had to say here, but I mean, what is Ukraine? I mean, what are they talking about? Again, Politico's talking about 10-year, you know, plan for Ukraine. Well, I don't know what Ukraine is right now. It just lost four of its regions. I mean, the more the West helps from 2014 to the present, the smaller the country gets. And of course, what we see, the infrastructure of the country being degraded because of this conflict here. I mean, I don't see what the prize is, okay? I don't see what the prize of American hegemony all through Europe. If it has no productivity, what kind of prize is it? The Europeans will be so poor, they can't buy anything from America. I don't understand any of the economics of this here. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, this war was never meant for the benefit of anyone in the Ukraine. Ukraine went from being the most prosperous republic of the Soviet Union to being the poorest country of Europe after the 2014 coup. What U.S. domination and control run by a fascist, really a gang of Nazis, meant for the Ukraine was mass privatization, cuts in every social program, destruction of the unions, in every way, a looting of the economy. That was fine by the U.S. It was their intention, and it bound Ukraine all the tighter to U.S. policymakers, made them totally dependent on every handout, such as Afghanistan was. It's impossible to even picture the rate today of impoverishment in the Ukraine. So Ukraine is being used as a proxy force, as a military force, but it's also, its economy is under the control.
But Sarah, we all know that Biden is sending billions and billions more, and the EU has to step up with more and more euros. I think we all have a pretty good idea where that money's going. I call it the Hunter Biden effect, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's certainly, so many of the weapons that go, as soon as they're over the border, they disappear. And we know there's a huge, you know, gray market in this in weapons and in the resale of weapons and all other goods. None of it is for the benefit of the people of Ukraine. And even though Ukraine wasn't a NATO member, they were forced. Their military was used and sent to Afghanistan, sent to Iraq, where they operated under U.S. command. So it's not a question of defending Ukraine or anything that benefits the people. And yet this policy is a spectacular failure on the part of the U.S. The sanctions that they sought to impose through this have been a howling blunder. It's really boomeranged back on the U.S., of course, on the EU even more. But Ukraine from the beginning was used, and they want to continue to use it.
Yeah, well, but Sarah, let's remind everyone, there were plenty of people in Ukraine that wanted to be used and still like being used, okay? Karen,
that's the strength of Nazi propaganda. Sure, it's true. It's powerful.
Karen, you know, one of the things that, you know, we can discuss this all we want, but the biggest picture is, and I guess I call it the December 17th picture, Russia's security demands of the West, addressed a message, a note, an ultimatum, whatever you want to call it, to NATO and to the United States. It was completely brushed off here, but those things stand. Okay, this is, see, the West can negotiate, not negotiate, they can arm, they can do money, all this, but Russia's aims have not changed. They will not cease until desist until their security demands are met, okay? That's it, okay? You can do the Zelensky and Vogue, and you can all do all that nonsense, but Russia's demands have not changed, okay? And if NATO exists or doesn't exist after this, it's immaterial. Russia will get what it wants out of this, full stop. Karen.
Yeah, I think fundamentally that's the case. But you got to look at why the U.S. is willing to destroy Ukraine entirely, and as it's used it, you know, previously already as a tool, nothing but a tool for corruption. In fact, one of the things that Sarah didn't mention is the most corrupt nation in Europe was Ukraine. I mean, there's a black hole for any type of corruption and government money laundering and that kind of thing. So that's the purpose of Ukraine. It's still serving that purpose to a great extent. I mean, all the old weaponry from all the NATO countries is being poured in without regard to if it works, if it doesn't work, if it works together, if anybody can use it, it's irrelevant. We're dumping that weaponry so that we can then justify to our own populations, you know, new refreshed defense spending. Meanwhile, the battlefield isn't just Ukraine. It is Europe. It is Germany. It is, you know, we asked the question, why would the U.S. want a deflated, weakened, dependent European continent? Why would we want that? Well, you know, the glory days of America were under the Marshall Plan. To many of the thinkers that design our foreign policy, this is glory days. This is the potential for a new era of American dominance globally. Now, of course, they're fantasists. There's no doubt. You know, we have $31 trillion in debt that can't be paid back. You know, we're printing money. This is not a sound dream. It's not a sound program, but it is the program that the U.S. is embracing. And it really is. It goes beyond corrupt and idiotic. It actually becomes a little bit on the evil side.
Yep. You know, Nikolai, I mean, I don't want to be a history geek here, but you do remember the Morgenthau Plan for Germany that was the thought of, de-industrialization, you know. I think it's the Morgenthau Plan for the entire European continent now.
Well, I think it was Churchill who said the Russians don't want war, they want the fruits of war. Today, we're talking about the same objective for the United States as the global hegemon. And I think, again, Putin is probably more correct than wrong in his analysis of world events when he says this hegemon is going to cling to power as long as it possibly can. It's not going to go off quietly into the night. It's going to be a violent effort to claw and hold on to power for as long as possible.
Well, I mean, Nikolai, I look at it this way. You look at the crew that's in the Biden administration right now. It's the same crew from Obama, okay? They look at this as all unfinished business here. I'm thinking of Victoria Nuland and people like that. They see this as their last chance, one last chance to humiliate Russia, to pull it down a few notches. And in doing so, it imperils. I mean, we are on the brink. We've already used that word here. And it seems to be used in the U.S. in a very casual way. Listening to Biden speak, I was terrified that a president of the United States would speak that way. Nikolai.
It's bizarre to me that they are, these leaders that you've mentioned, are appropriating the language of realism to pursue a totally unrealistic and highly ideological liberal international affairs program. And that's why we've had, I think, the intellectual opposition in the United States has a difficult time holding our political leaders to account, because they're talking out of both sides of their mouths, and you don't know what they're actually thinking, except you can intimate that perhaps it is to hold on to power for themselves.
Well, I mean, if we can go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, at the end of the day, the two leaders, the two governments understood each other. We're not even close to that right now. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Kingsland, Mount Jackson, and in Jersey City. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.